I'm Judy Swallow in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Lights, camera and cue, the coal-eyed hero on the white horse to rescue the swooning maiden in the wet sari from the mustachioed villain. Or make that 10. Now bring on the giant chorus of gyrating singers and dancers in their gaudiest gear. No narrative reason, but in Bollywood it's the show that counts, big and extravagant and most of all, kitsch. That's the way the Indian film industry's been seen since it boomed in the 1930s. For the few in the West who'd heard of it, that is. Bollywood made its movies for the home crowd, a devoted audience, half a billion strong, and dirt poor. In small villages and shanty towns, fans would scrape and save for a ticket costing less than a quarter. For their money, they wanted a big show, Hindu epic meets Hollywood musical, an amusing caricature to Western eyes, enchanting escapism for India's poor. But suddenly the tables have turned, Hollywood's looking east. Direct exports, copies or spin-offs, Bollywood is chic, and even getting nods from the Oscars. Connection listeners, is Bollywood only a haute exotic destination, or does it have the power to change Hollywood? Or will it be the other way around? And why does Bollywood appeal to Western eyes and ears? Is it just the thrill of the Eastern exotic, or a hunger for bygone days of good guys, bad guys, and beautiful women who can dance? 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. My guests today are film legend Ismail Merchant, who got his passion for cinema in his native India, but has travelled a long and illustrious path since. He's not turned his back on his roots, though. He's just hosted a Bollywood film festival on US TV. My other guest was seduced by the Indian film industry through a very different route. Photographer Jonathan Todgovnik finished his national service in the Israeli army and went to India to chill out. The world he discovered on show in a New York exhibition and is in his stunning pictorial essay, Bollywood Dreams, goes beyond the glitz and the stars to the incredible cast of characters behind the scenes and the culture that surrounds cinema in India, beginning with its grassroots, the touring movie house, trucks carrying the magic of Bollywood to the poorest villages. Gentlemen, welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Ismail Merchant, can I begin with you? It's a wonderful passage in your book, My Passage from India, where you say, you talk about how you were seduced by Bollywood, the story of the marigolds. Tell us the story of the marigolds.
Well, that's such an amazing thing that happened when I was 13 years old. This actress who had just made her first film, Barsaat, Rain, for Raj Kapoor, who's a big movie star and a director and a producer. So she came to Bombay, and we have family friends, so she came to visit us at home in Bombay. And her film was opening, and she asked me whether I would go to the premiere with her. And I was delighted, you know, because I'd never been with a movie star to a premiere. So we drove in her green convertible Cadillac to the cinema, Imperial Cinema, and there were thousands of people chanting her name, Nimmi, Nimmi, and throwing marigolds. So we were submerged in marigolds in the car. You could barely see, you know, through these marigolds. And I said to myself, what a wonderful life. You make movies and you are submerged in marigolds. So that affected me so much that I said I didn't want to do anything else but just be a movie maker or a filmmaker. So that really was the first step into my career, which was smitten by this incredible evening with this beautiful star, Nimmi.
I can almost smell India with your description there. But tell me a little bit more about Nimmi. I mean, you became very passionate about this woman. And you've always said that passion is what you need to get what you want to achieve. Is your lifelong passion sort of a legacy of Nimmi?
Well, Nimmi inspired many, many things, you know, including she wanted me to star with her when I grew up, you know, to be 16, 17 or 18, that she would be the leading lady with me. But that didn't happen. As a matter of fact, I took another route. But she was, you know, I would go to her. I almost became a stalker, you know, and would wait for her by her apartment, go to the studios with her. And there was a kind of elegance and beautiful. She was amazingly beautiful, like a combination between Hedy Lamarr and Ingrid Bergman, you know, that kind of beauty. And she acted with all the big movie stars. You know, her leading men were Dilip Kumar and Raj Kapoor and Dev Anand and, you know, all the movie stars in Bombay. So I was very drawn to her. I would go to the movies with her, you know, particularly Hollywood films, to see Betty Davis and Hedy Lamarr and you know, Katharine Hepburn. So those are the things that I would go to the films, which is the Eros Cinema in Bombay, and we would sit in the balcony, and everybody would sort of look at her, and I would get a great thrill, you know, as if they were watching me as well.
Well, Jonathan, let's bring you in there, because Ismail, of course, was born and brought up in this environment with the Bollywood films and this almost godlike status. You, as I described in the opening, went to India to chill out and discovered it. There is an almost intermingling of religion and cinema in India, isn't there?
Absolutely. My first, as you said, my first trip to India was in 1991 after my military service. And as soon as I arrived to India and walked in the streets and the cities and even the small towns, I could but not notice how influential cinema is immediately. I would see these long lines of people coming out of the cinemas. I would see the huge billboards on the streets and the torn posters on the little walls. Everywhere you go, it's like one big collage. And I was just intrigued by that, and just speaking to the people, the local people, and hearing their excitement about cinema and about their favorite stars and the adoration of the stars really made me fascinated with it, and of course brought me into the cinemas and to see the films, and I was just immediately hooked.
I wish we could have distributed your book to all the Connection listeners so that they could know what we're talking about, because they're wonderful pictures. But, I mean, the pictures that are really exciting are not of the stars. That's a very small part of your book. It's the audience. I've got a picture of here of a little boy peeping through, and they're paying nothing for these tickets, but it's just such a passion, isn't it? It's a national passion.
That specific image you mentioned is great, because it's a part of this little essay I did about the touring cinemas in India. And actually, this kid, after he bought that ticket, I spoke to him through a translator I had, and it's the first ticket he ever bought for a movie in his life. And to see the kind of nervousness intermingled with the excitement he had to see this film was just unbelievable. And then to see these all of these people that rarely see films in the rural areas, this touring cinema basically is a wonderful concept, which is a truck, an old truck that travels to really small villages in places where the nearest cinema is maybe 100 kilometers away, and the people do not have an opportunity to see a film. They arrive to the village. I call it the vehicle of dreams. They really arrive to the village, set up almost like a circus tent, and you would have 1,000 people at a time sitting on the ground watching the film. The two projectors are mounted in the truck itself and projected from the truck into the screen in the cinema. And just to see the enjoyment of these people and to see the happiness it gives them to see cinema is just enough.
By the way, I've just been reminded by my producer that we've got a photo gallery on our website, so you can join in the conversation in vision as well. But Ismail Merchant, you were brought up with this Bollywood dream, but left it behind. Why was Bollywood not enough for you? Well, too simplistic, perhaps?
Well, apart from simplistic, I didn't want to just make musicals in Bollywood or in Bombay film world. I wanted to make international films, and that's why, you know, the reason my passion sort of, when even in college, after meeting Nimmi and, you know, studying at St. Xavier's College, I would draw up a list of the actors whom I would have, Nimmi with Victor Mature or Gregory Peck or Susan Hayward with Dilip Kumar. So I would make the cast list, you know, sitting in the college canteen. And my friends would say, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm making my cast list for my future films. And they said, future films? What do you mean? You're sitting here. I said, yes, but someday I'm going to be making these films. And the passion was just to make international film with the biggest stars of Bombay and of Hollywood. And when I went to study at NYU and made my first film, The Creation of Woman, which was nominated for Oscar. I took it to Los Angeles, and there I met Susan Hayward and Sidney Poitier and Gregory Peck, and, you know, you just name it, you know, because those are the stars. And I was calling myself a producer from India. I had never produced a film in India, but I had made it one in New York, and I was just bragging away that I'm here to offer you the best parts in the films to be made in India with Bombay movie stars.
So now you're being honest, several decades down the road, being honest about your CV. But
you have to, in order to sort of get anywhere in life, you have to get everybody believe in your dreams. Everybody has to think that, yes, your dreams are the best. And that's what it is all about, isn't it? You know, you're in Bombay. I grew up on Bollywood films and Hollywood films. I went there, you know, avidly to see these films. And they just excited me. And when I now come to the premiere of my film, La Divorce, you know, in Hollywood with all the movie stars with me, I was just so thrilled, as if, you know, I was a little kid, you know, going to see the film with Nimmi. You know, so now it is almost, 40 years since I've been making films. And any premiere or anything that happens, you know, when the films are shown, you feel as excited as if you were a teenager.
Jonathan, coming to India as an outsider, did you think this was something else? You've talked about this touring theatre, these trucks going round to these tiny villages. Do you think it's almost a different culture that has come out of the Hindu poems like the Ramayana and Mahabharata? Is that what's going on here? Because I went to see Ramayana that went on night after night after night after night, and that's the way the audiences are in India. Are they there for almost a religious devotion?
You definitely see this in not only in Bombay, but in all of India. And in fact, you mentioned that in the beginning, and it was very important for me, really, going. I hear a lot, when speaking about Bollywood, people mention a lot the word kitsch, and it was very important for me to go beyond that kitsch, because a lot of what people know of Indian cinema and Bollywood here in the West, in America and Europe, is kind of almost sometimes even making fun of the films, and you're just thinking of the hero and heroine running in the fields and the score of dancers behind them. But I feel you can learn a lot about Indian culture through Indian cinema when you really look deeper into it. And there are a lot of and I think it really reflects India's social identity, and the religious part of things is really one of the... I feel that Indian people are looking to identify with something, and the two major things I think they identify with is religion and cinema. And they both, I think, also connect in many ways. And from just being on the streets and being on the sets, I noticed several things which really reassure me and confirm this notion and this thought, from instances where on the sets, where in the beginning of the day of the shooting, for instance, they bless the camera with a whole religious pujas offering ceremony, so the camera produces good film that day.
Connectionlessness, do you think Bollywood gives us a view of India beyond the kitsch? My guest, Jonathan Todgovnik, and for my other guest, Ismail Merchant, a treat. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR. We're talking Bollywood this hour and the insight it gives you into Indian culture and its migration to the West. My guests, film director and producer Ismail Merchant, photographer Jonathan Todgovnik. What you're hearing there is music from Ghost World. And as we went out, Ismail Merchant, did you recognize her? That was the voice of Nimmi, your love from your youth. Are you in tears?
No, I am in tears. You can't see my tears unless you have some kind of a magic. But I'm delighted. I think what is interesting when you mention about religion, Indians are very religious people. and family-oriented. Those are the two most important things. And then Ram Leela, which is, you know, the story of Ramayana, that is one of the biggest festivals, and they, the gods and goddesses affect our lives. So there are about 1,000 festivals which go from, you know, first of the year to the very end of the year, and they are celebrated all over India, you know, like Durga Puja, you know, which is in Bengal, which is, you know, about goddess Kali. I mean, that is, you know, when Durga Puja takes place, there are 10 days, it's holidays, and everybody is in the streets, and the statue of Durga, you know, because it is both a creator and a destroyer. So the idea of, you know, the myth, the religion, the kindness to people, and, you know, you know, rebirth, you know, like reincarnation, all that has become a very important thing, even in relation to cinema, which has affected greatly in storytelling.
Well, so, lots of wonderful things there to cherish and preserve, but certainly Bollywood is invading the West. Some of them are not actually Bollywood films, like Monsoon Weddings. But if you look at a film like Lagaan, does this show, well, maybe we better explain a bit what it's about, but does this show that Bollywood is really coming of age? Bollywood can actually address something more than just boy meets girl and has a little trouble with a villain.
Well, you know, the Mother India, some years ago, Mehboob Khan, that was nominated for Oscar. But that did not get as much attention as Lagaan because of the media hype today. You know, and everyone talks about internet and television and cable and all. So that was much more publicized. But Mother India, when it was nominated, it didn't get as much publicity as Lagaan. And Mother India is a great movie with Nargis and Sunil Dutt and Rajendra Kumar. You know, it's a really an extraordinary epic. And then when Lagaan came into the picture after many, many, many years, so it is out of 800 films which are made in India, there's only one Lagaan. It was 500 films that were made, and there was only one Mother India. So it's not what it is today with fashion, with music. Music has been a very important part of our lives. You know, the greatest musicians from India, they perform here in the West. And to sell out crowds, you know, in both in England and in America or Germany or Switzerland or Italy. So I think the music and how one has made it more popular through MTV, the influence of MTV and Indian cinema, and now, of course, the choreographers of Indian musicals are influencing MTV performers. So you see, this is the kind of a give and take, you know, borrowing from one culture and giving it back again to the other culture. So that has been a fascinating thing. And I think music plays a very important part in our lives. Gods and goddesses, movie stars. So we want to, you know, again, this stories of gods and goddesses also sort of, you know, taking you from your meager world to something quite extraordinary. Similarly with cinema, you know, it does that very sort of religiously and gives you that excitement, that entertainment. So I think out of 1.1 billion people we have in India, we don't have to look outside for the support. We can just depend on the money and the economy that sort of propels from these people who go to see the films.
Jonathan, what do you think about this? When you went there and studied the whole culture of cinema, did you think you were preserving something that was uniquely Indian and that the migration we're seeing is just a little trickle to the West, which is not part of this mainstream? Is this another world you're portraying or something which is really taking off here?
Well, I think that cinema is really, for most of the people in India, the only means of entertainment they have. So I think this is why it also became so influential in India and you know, all the other implications that it has from it in terms of how the level also of the adoration of the stars and all the other connections it has. I'm really, really glad to see that it's getting more attention here in the West. I do think it has to do a lot with what Mr. Merchant said relating to MTV and to fashion and definitely Lagaan and Monsoon Wedding as well. As much as it's not a Bollywood film, many people associate it to some extent with it. And I think, in fact, Meera Nair took that film and really almost modified it for a Western audience. I think it's very difficult for a proper Bollywood film to be really extremely successful here in America because they're too long. But I think people are waking up to this beautiful phenomenon of just pure and simple entertainment and beauty on a very simple level. And definitely I think it will become bigger.
But can we only sort of accept in the West the sort of the chicken tikka masala version of Bollywood, that we wouldn't actually want the pure Bollywood? Because this is pure escapism for simple people, very poor people, largely illiterate people, you know, and they don't want searing reality in their films if you're living on less than a dollar a day.
Yeah, but that is true. Nevertheless, something very interesting is happening now with a lot of Bollywood, especially the Bombay productions, is that many of the films are being produced in mind to be distributed and to appeal to, first of all, Indian immigrant communities outside of India, meaning in America and in Europe mostly, and also to try to appeal to Western audience in general. So the films are, if you see some of the new films, they are starting to change. And if we're looking again at that classy Bollywood film, masala film, I definitely think it could stay just as a fashion to be a cool thing to go and see. But the interesting thing is that they're investing, you know, the big budget films. In fact, just last week, the day of this famous blackout in New York, I was on the set of a big Bollywood film which is being produced in New York. The whole film is being shot in New York with Shah Rukh Khan, one of the biggest stars of Indian cinema. So they're also looking for the locale to be different in terms of shooting the film in the West, but with all the Indian stars, with still having the 5-6 song and dance sequences. I spoke with the choreographer, and in fact, they're even modifying that part of things. It's not anymore, they have only maybe one or two songs in that film, which is going to be with the, 30 or 40 dancers in the background. It's going to be more about the hero and heroine and in a way, toning it down to appeal to Western audience. I think there's an attempt to break in somehow, because they feel this excitement going on in the West about it, and I think people, obviously they want to try to capitalize on it.
Connection listeners, tell us, why does Bollywood appeal to Western eyes and ears all of a sudden? Kevin is joining us from Fall River, Mass. I better give out the number, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Kevin, hi.
Hello.
What's your point, Kevin?
Well, two questions. First of all, I was living in Portugal in the early 80s, more specifically in the Azores, and it was the first time I had the opportunity to see Bollywood films. And I was taken back because I had never seen one before. And out there, it's, let's go see an Indian movie. It's not on all the time. There's only a few theaters, but it's a regular, It's like going out for Italian, and you look forward to it. And I got a kick out of it. I saw a bunch of them. And so my first question is, why don't we have more access to it in the United States? And two, the second question is the plots. I mean, I didn't see too many. It was only a couple of years I was out there, but I saw several. And there was a certain circular. It wasn't Hollywood. There was a certain... I remember this was a particular case where, and it seemed to be typical of the certain things that what you do to others eventually comes back in some strange way. And I remember, some young person going out, and he was kind of cruel to it. He was cruel to his parents. He was, quote-unquote, quasi, maybe the bad guy or something like that. But he became more complex by the end, and his children ended up being cruel to him. So, and it was like a full circle. It was a certain kind of, I wouldn't say Western justice, but a certain way of looking at the world that I found that was applicable in some of the other plots, too, and I found that intriguing.
Do you think they were sort of morality tales, Kevin?
Well, I think in morality, but I wouldn't say, that's why I think it's kind of, maybe the word karma, I don't know, but is it morality in a way that, I think we're maybe caught in our own Western language. It wasn't morality in the sense of, you think of a Christian thing. I don't think so. There's a certain kind of, you say moralizing or a Hollywood morality thing, and I've got a certain connotation, a certain taste, and I don't think it was quite that, because it wasn't, it was fun. It was good guy, bad guy, plenty of choreographed fight scenes. They were, and you say kitsch, but then again, so's opera. That it's so artificial that it bursts out into the reality of people's feelings. They drop the facade. When someone's sad, or they're incredibly ecstatic and with a love or something, they're singing. I mean, it's pure. It's not like a facade. So, to a certain extent, it's so artificial in their costumes and their dance that, it always struck every once in a while a chord of a deeper reality of how someone genuinely feels but wouldn't show in public.
Ismail Merchant, do you recognize what Kevin there is talking about? This sort of deeper reality, but not the Christian sense of a morality tale.
Well, there is always, I don't know whether Kevin has seen the Satyajit Ray great trilogy of the Apu trilogy, because when he made the films in Bengal, they always spoke a language which is very pure and very, very simple and very touching emotionally. What we have done in Bollywood is everything is exaggerated. Even if a theme is taken, it's with a greater exaggeration than the purity. So there is that difference. In the same country where you are talking about Bengal, you're talking about Bollywood, there is a sort of a great difference of cinema. And that cinema, which Ray did, was a cinema of the heart and the mind. What Bollywood does is on the surface, and it has that kitsch, which is attracting lots of people. And always, art has always attracted, in the sense that if you look at the 1930s and you look at the 20s, there was a great deal of kitsch in visual art, and that attracted so many, many, many people. It sort of followed into costume and jewelry and all kinds of things, furniture. And this particular world which we are talking about, there is a kind of a almost like a synthetic approach to things. Yes, you want to show a simple story, but there is a very much of a synthesity, and I think that is why things sort of appeal to the West, because the reality, seeing a poor family in India, is not of greater attraction as opposed to seeing someone which changes in one song. You can change 10 costumes, and the music is very much a Western and Eastern music, and it has its own rhythms and its own force, and it is very appealing. It's also the tunes are very catchy. So I think there is a great difference today. When you are talking, and why you are attracted to Bollywood or Bollywood films is the reason that we also in the West want to escape,
Okay,
not just one country, but everyone wants to escape to some other world.
Kevin, thanks for your call, and let's pick up that point. Why can't we get it here? Are the distributors getting it wrong? Majid is joining us from Baton Rouge. Hi, Majid.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. The reason I called, I listened to the topic and couldn't resist not to call, because as a person who grew up with the Indian movies as a kid, I grew up in Tehran, Iran, and I remember, sitting between my father as a child when I was like 2-3 years old, who was a very disciplined man, and my mother very conservative, and seeing them both crying, watching Raj Kapoor and Nargis, doing their show. So I just called to pay homage to the father of Indian movie industry, Raj Kapoor, may God bless his soul, which also called the Charlie Chaplin and Indian movie. And also letting your audience know that it was Raj Kapoor who created this massive force of the unsilenced armies in Asian countries that they have grown up, and these are the Raj Kapoor's army. And I still watch Indian movies, and I love them, and my children watch them, and they sit and we watch and cry together and have a tear. So that's what I felt to call in and let you know the impact of the Indian movie industry, at least, in my life.
Do you think, Majid, that most Americans get Bollywood films, or do they just come around to your house and say, what are you watching, all these silly dancing girls?
In general, in a university level, intellectual level, there are, you sometimes be surprised that some people surprise you that how much they know. But in general, I think they don't have the understanding of the sophistication and the work that Bollywood puts into movie making. I think way before even Hollywood tried to, I think Bollywood was, I know Raj Kapoor, he was making movies about even the little wall I used to see, like, he said, I go on this side, it's Hindus, India, on the other side, Pakistani. And then he kind of, as a kid, you get this image, this wall, separating. And so he had this genius about him that it's been going on with the Indian movie industry. We have the director like nowadays, like David Dhawan, who only believes in a movie industry is just the fun and make believe and go there have fun. But then you have people like Sanjay Leela Bhansali, who
Majid, I think we've gathered you're a real fan, Jonathan. Jonathan, can I ask you though, is that a rarity? Do you think Americans really have a hard time getting pure Bollywood?
I think they didn't have yet an opportunity to really go deep into it. I think it's just, you know, starting to get popular. And I think once they, you know, people really have the opportunity to see more films and be exposed more to it, maybe they will be able to understand it better. Just like the previous caller said, in Portugal, I think he saw these films. In England, it's also the same thing. I mean, in England, it's been very popular for years, and there are many cinemas that are just open, and people just go for, you know, let's go to an Indian film. It's exactly that. I wanted to touch on one point that this caller talked about, and it's one of the most important things I felt being in India, which the influences that cinema has on India, and I really felt that cinema is the uniting element of India, of the Indian culture. I used to call my subtitle to my book used to be India's Common Religion, Cinema, because it's really, I think, the central element that brings Indian people together in a time where there's a lot of tension between Hindus and Muslims. Cinema, when you talk about cinema, everything is really fair ground. And in fact, a lot of the top stars in Indian cinema are all Muslims, but there's no animosity whatsoever within them. When you talk about cinema, it's a beautiful kind of neutral gray area that everybody enjoys and is together with.
And astonishing, really, having Muslim stars, isn't it, in that Hindu country?
I mean, there's Shah Rukh Khan, Salman Khan, Amir Khan, the star of Lagan. They're all, you know, the Khan gang. they're all there, and it's just a beautiful uniting element that they have. And I just to add another thing is that definitely I think that the morals are integral, important part, one of the most important parts of a Bollywood films and family values as well.
Connection listeners, how about that? Cinema, the power of it in Bollywood, bringing the nation together. 800-423-8255, 800-423, to join us after the break.
He is mine!
I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR. We're talking Bollywood this hour, its power and place in India and its migration west. My guests, film director and producer Ismail Merchant and photographer Jonathan Todgovnik. Ismail Merchant, before the break, we were talking about the power of cinema to mend fences, if you like. Yes, unite.
Yeah.
I was being cautious using the word unite. But do you think it has that power to unite?
Oh, it does, absolutely. You know, when I was very young and I went to the sets, Muslims and Hindus worked together as technicians and stars, and, you know, and most of the, you know, the composer, Naushad, was a great, great composer, and the singer, you know, Mohammad Rafi was a playback singer, and Talat Mahmood, and, you know. So I think what it is that this is one place where the language, Urdu, for example, you know, is used extensively by singers, the heroes and heroines of the Indian cinema. So this is one place where if politicians want to divide the country, you have one mission and one voice through the films, and that is, you know, the cinema. And cinema brings these people together, and they know that the talented people will speak a language which is shared between the two communities. And that, I think, is a very important thing. And I know all the when this friend called from Iran, you know, and talking about his family, listening to the music of Raj Kapoor and the cinema of Raj Kapoor. Well, Raj Kapoor always had some theme or the other, a very important theme in his films, and Mehboob Khan as well. And I think that his songs translated and sang in Russia, all over Russia, when in Hollywood stars were not even known, or even if they were known, they were not worshipped as Raj Kapoor and Nargis were worshipped in Russia. Because whenever he would arrive at the airport, there would be a band playing his song, and singers would be singing in Russian. It's just one of those phenomena that Raj Kapoor's film or the musicals from Bollywood create and have created and will create, because that's the Far East, Middle East, in Middle East, everywhere. You know, you hear these songs because musicals are very, very popular. And the language, Farsi, is just Persian, because there are lots of words from Farsi into Urdu, and the songs are, you know, they are taken from this language. I think it's a very important thing, and people don't realize that what a unit, you know, uniting sort of like a factor where unity is established through this medium.
Can I just ask you quickly, Jonathan, do you like these films? I mean, they're fascinating, but the culture is fascinating. You like them?
I love them. I'm addicted to them, more than love them. I just love watching these films. I think they're just so beautiful, entertaining, and all these things I talked about, I'm personally influenced by. And now, of course, that I know a lot of the people in the industry and spend so much time there, it's really something I don't think I can live without.
Do you actually sit through the full 4 hours, or you nip out?
I do. For most of the times I do. While I worked on the project in India, there were a few instances where I actually walked out, but I definitely sometimes just even I go to Lexington Avenue and buy these DVDs of the films, and just in my leisure time watch some of these films. I think they're just fantastic.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Bollywood fans, Andy's joining us from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Andy.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking the phone call from Nashville. Just a couple of quick points. One is that in my experience in different cities around the country, normal consumers can actually access these types of films by going to Indian grocery stores that are often attached to Indian restaurants. So anyone across America who would actually like to try to find one of these, they're available all over the country in these grocery stores.
Handy tip.
The second thing is that I think a full appreciation of these types of films really occurs if one looks at them or regards them as sort of like an entertaining genre or subgenre that follows its own rules, a la like the way the Western follows its own rules, or a Busby Berkeley musical does. If you try to compare it to sort of like a specific Hollywood-type film, I think American audiences might be somewhat sort of taken aback or even alienated. But if they can fully appreciate it as a form that has its own rules and its own entertainment sort of parameters, that would be very probably an easy way to get it. I have one question, and I'll get off the air. And Ishmael, this is a great honor to speak with you, because you are a magnificent filmmaker that I've been following for actually a couple of decades now. The one question I have is, these types of films in India itself, not just sort of transcontinental the way you've been talking about, but in India itself, how does it integrate, or how does it play across all the various social strata that have been in that culture for thousands of years? Thank you.
Interesting point, Ismail. How does it relate across caste and across class as well? Because you've got such a booming middle class in India.
Well, no, because everyone, you know, can. The one thing you can do away without food, tea, anything, but not without films. Whether you are an untouchable, or whether you are a poor class or middle class or the rich class, the cinema is the center of one's life. And you can't just get away, as Jonathan said, that, you know, he saw it in his book particularly reflects, and we were interested, that's the Merchant and Ivory Foundation presented his at our foundation, this entire exhibit of his book and his pictures. And that's what is so interesting, of not only just movie stars dancing and singing, but there are people who are devoted their lives, you know, in the villages and small towns, you know, and taking the print and projector and showing it to the people, where thousands of people come to enjoy, and then there is a repeat audience, because musical numbers, you just can't be satisfied by seeing it once. You have to see it several times.
I was going to actually ask you, Jonathan, how do you manage it?
Actually, I have a good example of that. It's great that Ishmael says this, because while I was covering this touring cinema in that little village of Pali in the state of Maharashtra, I interviewed two young men that were there, and they said, you know, we've been saving money the whole year waiting for this cinema to come, and it did not arrive. So we waited for 2 years for the cinema to arrive, and they were going to see 15 films in that week that the cinema is there, and meaning they carry with them only 3 film titles. So basically they're going to see 5 times each one of these films the time that the cinema is there.
But do you feel, Jonathan, that maybe you're capturing a piece of Indian history that as it gets more prosperous, as the middle class booms and people become and literacy rates increase, that this will be a piece of India's past? Because I often say to people, get to India now before it changes.
Yeah. Well, I feel it's very far from getting to that magnitude of change. You know, we're talking about 1.1 billion people. But India has today 500 million people under the age of 25, and these are the core people that are going to see the films. And this is why I said before, I think, yes, the Bombay film industry is the pioneer, I think, in changing a little bit the structure of how the film is, and to appeal, as well as for Western audiences and immigrant communities in India, to the middle upper class in India. But I definitely, you know, still the film, one of the things I always say is that you can learn about Indian culture through the films, because it deals with caste, religion, politics, all these things that Indian people need to deal with every day. And together with that masala formula of having betrayal and heroism, song and dance and romance and action and violence, it creates this fantastical film that I think caters to everybody. I just want to say one more thing. You know, one of the inspirations I had when thinking about this project was Ismail Merchant's wonderful film, Bombay Talkies, which Ismail, when was that made, that film?
That was 1969.
I was born in 1969. So he made this film in 1969, and the opening scene of that film, it's so vivid in my mind, because this is one of the reasons I said I really need to go and start this project after I saw that, because it's so visual and beautiful, is this scene of men carrying on a pushcart this magnificent, huge, what they call cutout, which is a hand-painted advertising for the film, and usually it's cut out to the shape of the star, and just pushing it on the streets of Bombay at dawn before the traffic really starts, so they can take it from the studio where it was painted to place it outside of the cinema. And sure enough, in one of my trips, I was in, especially in South Indian Bombay, it's not so apparent anymore, but in Madras, I visited the studio of Mohan Arts, is one of the famous artists that creates these cinemas, as this exactly that same scene happened. You're talking 30-some years later. It's beautiful.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Mohammed's joining us from Kerry in North Carolina. Hi, Mohammed.
Hi. I used to watch Indian movies when I was growing up, but when I came to the U.S., I stopped watching them.
Why?
The reason was that every movie I would pick up, they would try to copy Americans. And also, the movies are filmed in Europe, not in India. I still watch movies which have Indian culture and the local issues, or at least filmed in India. But anything that they're filming in either Dancing in Champs-Élysées or somewhere in Europe and try to copy Americans, that's a big turnoff for me, so I just stopped watching it.
Mohammed, thanks for your call. Ismail Merchant, yeah, it's true that they are being shot in Switzerland and Scotland and everywhere now, but do you notice that? Do you believe that they are still just bad copies of Hollywood films?
Well, you know, there are some, you know, very genuine and, you know, quite extraordinary sort of song dance numbers. Particularly, we made a film called Helen, Queen of the Notch Girls. This movie star, she only did Busby Berkeley numbers or nightclub or you know, in cabaret numbers in the nightclub. And we did a film, a profile on her, which is so wonderful and so so entertaining, you know, and the way she brought her own entourage of people, and she would be just hired to do that particular musical. And we had her in Bombay Talkie dancing on the giant typewriter with the with the chorus girls on the keys of the typewriter, and she's singing this song about life on the typewriter.
Actually,
a
Jonathan,
wonderful scene.
Do you actually, Jonathan, see when you go to Hollywood films now and think there is a Bollywood influence? I mean, certainly Moulin Rouge, their dance scenes were based on Bollywood style.
Well, yeah, Moulin Rouge is the classic example. I don't really see, honestly, I don't see much influence from Bollywood other than though, you know, Moulin Rouge that you mentioned, and, you know, Madonna had some influences in her songs, and some of the artists take it, and Jean-Paul Gaultier, you know, is influenced by some of the Bollywood dresses from films and designing his clothes. But I don't really see a huge influence in Hollywood right now. Of Bollywood films.
Ismail, can I ask you finally, you said that you see cinema as being a great uniting force in India. You lived through partition, just the most horrific time. You're planning to make a film now about partition.
I want to. I want to make a film about partition and about these six families, which I'm researching right now, you know, how it affected their lives. You know, there would be three Hindu families and three Muslim families, and, you know, still their whole relationship, because, you know, people who have come from India to Pakistan, they still talk about India, and they still want to go back there, you know. So that has never diminished, including the Hindus who have come from Pakistan and live now in India. Their feeling is just as strong as ever. So, you know, this whole thing was like an artificial division created by the politician to divide India and Pakistan.
But would this be a Hollywood film that you would expect to be exported to India, or would it just not go down in that market?
No. I mean, it would be, obviously, with that in mind, it would be both for the consumption in Hollywood as well as Bollywood in India. Because we make films, as you've seen, you know, we've made now 46 films. People appreciate, you know, Heat and Dust, you know, which was a big hit, Shakespeare Wala. I mean, not in the same way as a Bollywood musical, but people went there for 6-7 weeks it ran, and, you know, it was a very, very gratifying thing. I made the film In Custody, which is about a Hindu Urdu poet and a Hindu admirer and a Hindu teacher. Well, that was an amazing film in Bhopal from the novel by Anita Desai. I think it has to be the filmmaker's duty is to show something about our culture and our lives, the way they are or the way they will be in the future or they have been in the past.
Ismail Merchant, thank you very much for joining us. Ismail Merchant, film director and producer and the author of My Passage from India. Thanks, too, to my other guest photographer, Jonathan Togovnik, whose new book is Bollywood Dreams, and I'm fighting my producer over it right now. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection from NPR.